Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 362 of the Roguecast, recorded February 8th, 2022. Overrated Sticky Crap.
3 weeks in a row, guys. 3 weeks in a row.
That's a new
good
record.
Good job, us.
Yes.
And we're getting past, we managed it during Deadly Ice Week.
It's true, Deadly Ice Week. We were closed last week on Thursday.
Yep. And now it's so much warmer that I wore shorts today.
Did you?
I wore sandals.
Yeah.
I wore my usual thing that I wear.
All right. Fair enough.
However, we did have a bit of a snag this week in that the new comics, we have Marvel and DC.
Yep.
But Diamond, we don't know
they
why.
They ran into an iceberg during the ice storm.
Quite possibly. Their comics, they messaged us on Monday. We're like, oh yeah, your books aren't going to get here until Thursday. And they messaged us today. And so, yeah, by the way, your books aren't going to be there until Friday. So if you're looking for Image Comics or anything other than Marvel or DC, it will probably be Friday this week.
Just to throw out this possibility, we dealt with a minor ice storm that closed us for once. The whole, East Coast was getting pummeled ice. So
no,
I'm just
saying,
it makes sense.
Diamond's been late, three times so far.
Yeah, they're
year.
Like what we are for podcasts.
Yes, Diamond Comics delivering comics is like us for podcasts. Unfortunately, while our business is not directly podcast related, yes. Their business is pretty squarely focused on delivering comics.
Yeah.
And they're not great at it.
No.
Maybe when it gets a little warmer in a month, they can deliver our things normally.
I don't think the warmth is the problem.
They're just going to keep making horrible die rolls. They're not going to hit the...
We have had 20 years of fairly minimal...
Yes, this is true. So what you're saying is they were due.
Probably. I'm just saying, let's see if they can get out of it. If they can get out of it. Everybody's stressed out, Randy. Don't hate.
At any rate, the important thing is we have DC and Marvel this week.
And we'll have comics.
And
the other comics.
And we'll have the other comics.
Yeah.
To be honest, there's not a lot of new stuff. I think there's just Faithless 3, number one.
Yeah.
But there is, Radiant Black is in there. Scorch number 2 is in there.
Somebody's other favorites are in there.
Somebody's favorites are in there.
If you want to go ahead and ask us what we think happens in them, we'll do our best.
Yeah, we can guess.
And guess.
I'm going to guess the Scorch is a bunch of Spawn characters.
And Radiant Black, the guys in helmets are going to stop a big bad.
And in Faithless, there's going to be naughty, naughty times.
There will be naughty, naughty times.
Beautifully rendered.
Yep.
But we'll be talking about all the comics. But first, we're going to talk about the games that came in this week. I guess the big news for the week for the store is that our annual inventory sale has begun.
Yes.
If you're not familiar with this, you probably have not been listening to the podcast for long. But basically, we do a clearance of stuff that hasn't sold in the last couple of years. Usually there's heartbreaking stuff in there where we're like, oh, this is so good. Why aren't people buying it?
Yep.
You have your last chance to buy it and make us at least a little bit happy that someone is getting this great thing.
Yep.
And you get it 50% off. So everything is 50% off on the table.
Boom.
We've got a bunch of board games, including, I think there's a copy of Western Legends still in there, which is a game I really love. There's some graphic novels. We haven't gotten Marvel and DC on there yet. We'll be adding that in the next few days. But I forget what all the... I know there's some highlights in the graphic novels.
Yeah, already there was some Valiant stuff that was really good.
Oh, yeah, Last Valiant went out there. But yeah, so come in, check that out, get some stuff for cheap.
Yes, you will walk in the door and there will be a table immediately that is 50% off.
Immediately begin probing the table.
Yes.
Yes.
In terms of game deliveries this week, we got the Root RPG, which is the long-awaited, ties into the board game Root, although you don't have to have played it.
But it's delightful woodland animals having D&D-type adventures.
Yes,
kind exactly. of an all-ages, Pixar-ish kind of vibe, it looks like.
Yeah.
Check out the art, it's so cool.
And they're
it's going to give you all kinds of neat ideas. You're going to want to play a possum or a fox or whatever.
Well, they're all different, there's different kingdoms.
Factions
and
kingdoms,
The cat kingdom is at war with the dog kingdom, and the raccoon is the vagabond, I think, and works for both.
Yeah, there's a bunch of neat ideas that kind of go deeper and have some fun. You're going to read about them, and you're going to be like, I want to do one of these.
Yeah, it looks very cool. It's also very pretty, and I think it's powered by the apocalypse, so it's got some of that playbook mechanic in there.
Yeah, I remember seeing that they had used playbooks.
We got a new edition of Patchwork. They've been doing a few of these. It's the Valentine's edition. Patchwork, for those who don't know, is the game where you build quilts.
Yep.
It's a two-player game. It's got sort of a Tetris vibe to it. You take these pieces.
Did we not talk about this last week?
We did. No.
Did we?
We did.
Oh.
Yeah, because I made a sexy patchwork joke because it's a Valentine's patchwork thing.
I played it, though.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
And
it was a lot of fun. The premise is that it's candy. It's like you're building a box of candy.
Uh-huh.
So instead of trying to to get buttons and again fill in the spaces so you make the perfect quilt. Mm-hmm. You're trying to fill a perfect candy box.
Yeah.
And you get points instead of the buttons on your pieces. They are pralines. So the more pralines you have in your box, the more points you get. And then the little bonus things you get as you go down the track are petty fours that you put to box.
I have to ask an important question.
Yes.
What if you don't like pralines?
Well, I was going to ask that same question, Nick.
you still get points for them, so you should like them for that. I also don't like pralines, by the way. I think they're overrated.
Yeah,
and I think they're overrated. I love sweets, but they're overrated sticky crap.
Yep. Agreed.
A quick aside about peanut brittle. I've liked some peanuts.
I like it better than pralines.
My granddad used to make peanut brittle. He also liked pralines. So he and all... What's the divinal, like, fudge? You know, like, the white fudge?
Yeah. The divinity?
Stuff? Divinity. Yeah. Man, that stuff's way too sweet.
My grandmother made divinity. She was very good at it.
Did people just eat those in smaller amounts last time, in old times? Because they're so sweet, a lot of that stuff.
No, Dave, old people were powered by sugar.
Is that why their teeth were falling out
yes,
so much?
That's why.
Now, Randy, so would you give a thumbs up to this game then?
Yes, I enjoyed it. I think...
I know that you had played... I have not yet to play the regular patchwork, but I've always... It is designed by that...
Uwe Rosenberg.
Uwe Rosenberg, he of many award-winning games. And this
he's
is like his...
Steven Spielberg of board games.
His focus on a two-player options, which is pretty cool.
It's really fun. I will say, having played this and been tempted by the Halloween edition and the Christmas edition, it feels like they're all the same game.
Yeah.
So to some extent, you got to pick your flavor and get it. Because there's not like... There's no mechanics in here that are different. It's just the flavoring.
It's kind of like if you get the Winter Carcassonne. It's really the same game. It just looks different and neat.
Yes. Although Winter Carcassonne at least had one, or was it?
There was a little separate micro mechanic with foxes.
I think
in
the
it.
Better comparison that this is Flux.
No, Flux is pretty different between games.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I've only played like one or two.
My comparison was fucking perfect.
Except there are no foxes in this, Dave.
Oh, that's a good point. I forgot the fox factor. Thanks for bringing that up.
Anyway, yes, I recommend it.
Yep.
And to get to finish the loop, I believe Divinity, Pralines, and the other thing, which I just said, peanut brittle. They're all in the same family of, I will eat it if I'm desperate for sweets.
Yes.
But I don't like any of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Fudge is the king.
Oh, man, fudge is also too sweet.
I think it's so good.
I'd take peanut brittle over fudge? Those. Yeah, absolutely.
I believe fudge is the top of that family. I think Nick has pegged it.
Oof.
But fudge I'd rather so have good. Other sweets.
Okay.
Anyway.
But now let's talk about the Witcher RPG.
Anyway, Russell, what do you think about these?
where's your hierarchy of sweets?
If you've had Divinity or Peanut Brittle or Fudge before, tell us what's the best.
Yeah. We should do a poll.
And also, what's the worst? Like, I want to know.
Divinity is the worst.
We'd like to hear from other people.
Yes.
What is Divinity?
Divinity is like it's like white fudge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, yes, the Witcher RPG came in. I think this is not, like, brand new, but it's new to us as a distributor.
Yep.
It's by the people who did Cyberpunk.
Okay.
So it's,
So do you play, like, Geralt? And
everybody is Geralt.
Everyone is Geralt. I assume it's in the world of the Witcher. Okay. I don't think you actually play Geralt.
Right, you probably play a Witcher and or a Bard and or a Sorceress or whatever the hell you want.
Makes sense.
I don't know. I don't know what all the Witchers are, so...
I have watched just enough Witcher to know the basics.
But there are Witchers.
There are Witchers. Anyway, it's a pretty looking book, and it looks pretty cool.
You are going to have some Witchers in your Witcher game?
From the same distributor, we also got Dark Matter, which is a 5e sci-fi rulebook, which the art on it looks really...
You gotta flip through this later. It looks like... It's such a cool space opera-looking thing.
Yeah. So are you talking like Mass Effect style?
No, actually more... Almost a little bit more Star like updated Wars-y? Buck Rogers, or indeed like the trailer we're going to talk about in a little while, the Buzz Lightyear look.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Which like, you know, like kind of brightly colored aliens and ships and stuff like that, a little cartoony looking, but painted and rendered with this like kind of high level of detail so that it's still kind of detailed looking in that sort of the way a lot of fantasy art tends to look.
It's not unlike the Starfinders, but there's no magic. It is strictly a...
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's not a magic game. It is strictly sci-fi.
Pew, pew.
So... we also got the Masquerade 2nd Edition. This is a game that it's been out of print for a little while. It's a pretty popular game. You're keeping masks and that kind of stuff. New addition to that, we got a game called Trek 12, which is a Roll and Write from the people who did Dinosaur Roar and Write and Machikoro and some of those, which is basically about a big mountain climb.
Yeah.
Looks very cool. We got a game called Dog Lover. which is from the same people who do the Cat Lady games.
Yeah.
It basically seems like maybe a set collection game about being a dog fan.
Yeah, you gotta look at the cards on the back. They're very fun.
They're very cute. We got the expansion for Dune Imperium, Rise of Ix.
Yep, that's the... My Dune knowledge isn't super deep, but I know enough to know that those guys are the sort of shape-changer aliens that they do tend to be sort of duplicitous, and I think they also do like sort of science experimentation. They might even be like not natural shape changers, but it may be some science stuff they discovered.
Racist against doppelgangers?
Probably.
You know, doppelgangers can be contributing members of society just like the rest of us. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a doppelganger.
I've got a friend who's a doppelganger.
Yeah,
I think that lets me off the hook for doppelganger jokes.
I see. Dave's friend, the doppelganger. All right, that's it for store news. Let's talk about the news, which we had a bunch of stuff we sort of hung on to for last week. And the big one, the D&D live action series, which I can't remember where that's going to be. Nick, do you remember? Is it Prime? Ugh. I don't think it's Prime.
No, I don't think it's Prime either.
I had forgotten. I thought it was going to be a movie, so it's a series.
There's a movie and a series.
Okay. A series, I think, and I think we've expressed this before, a series is a better place for D&D.
Oh, so it's from the creator of John Wick.
Yep.
Oh, right.
And I think it's in development, but, like, is it possible that they don't... Okay, it's Paramount. Oh, no, Paramount's bringing it to the big screen. So I don't know where the TV one is.
Is there new news on it? Is that the deal?
Yes. So it is. There's new news. We don't know where it's going to be. So one of the writers, Kolstad is the writer. He's the guy who created John Wick. He has also worked on Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Okay.
He worked on Die Hard over on Quibi, which was Kevin Hart training with an action to be an action star, which is very funny. We don't know where it's going to be, but
do you mean like network?
Okay, it may be one of these things where they're shopping it around.
My bet is Paramount,
but the writer is good, and they just landed the director of Red Notice to do it.
Yeah,
or as one of the directors,
which y'all have liked.
Yeah, he's a good director.
I think just kind of based on like Red Notice and what was one of that thing you just mentioned that was on Quibi.
Yeah.
Like D&D I think does need to be fun. I think I don't particularly want it to be the brand of fun that they are doing with
Vox Machina. I don't want to be quite that. I want
it to be like an all ages kind of thing, or all ages ish, but and to have some humor to it though, because like D&D is not Lord of the Rings. It needs to have some of the reflect at least the exuberance of players playing it. I don't want the full on players playing it vibe.
Well, I will say if you've got John Wick, Die Hard, Falcon Winter Soldier, and Red Notice,
yeah,
that's the right tone. That's action comedy. That's the tone I want.
Yeah. I think I would say I decidedly want it to lean more on the action side, but when I think about like how like if say they translated that something of the tone of Buffy over to it,
yeah.
Buffy was half comedy.
But here's the thing, on all four of those projects are action heavy.
Yeah,
they are not more comedy than action. They're more action than comedy. Which
even
is exactly
the Kevin Hart thing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was about him wanting to become an action star. So there's a lot of stunts and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that potentially bodes well. That it being a TV show bodes well.
Yeah.
They just need to have the old D&D movie on a loop and just not do anything.
Just don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah. You know how like what was it? I heard that the Marvel guys that Kevin Feige would like show like the Superman movie to indicate a tone to the MCU of like we want to capture what this kind of brought at the time. The exact opposite. Like we're gonna watch this. Don't go anywhere near any of this.
If it feels like this, stop doing whatever you're doing.
Just a quick question: should they go ahead and just go Forgotten Realms, or should it be like kind of an original setting?
They should do Forgotten Realms.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, what I really want is Eberron, but they're not going to do that. Yeah. Eberron is specifically a little more steampunky, so it's not a good baseline setting. For
right. Them. Eberron is something you do after this has had three good seasons.
But I think Forgotten Realms would be the way to go.
Yeah.
Yep. And the Forgotten Realms, I think, can be depicted with some lightness, even though there's not much innately light about it.
Yeah.
But there's no reason you can't bring some of that levity to it. Oh, well, as an example, it may not have been the funniest of humor, but when they had the advanced Dungeons & Dragons comic from DC in the 1980s, and it was set in the Forgotten Realms,
yep.
There was a lot of humor in it.
There was. It was actually good. That's the vibe I want, is that 80s D&D stuff.
Bring it up to date.
Yep. And have Minsk.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I think he would be funnest as a very fun guest star.
Yeah, I don't want him as the lead. I mean, but it's worked out for the D&D comics, so
I
maybe
think you
I'm
have to have him maybe. As a guest star, and you have to have Dritz as a guest star at some point.
I mean, that's the thing, sure, is there's sure. enough big names that these, like, the characters could kind of intermix, you know.
Elminster.
They run into Elminster.
Morhen Kanan. Xanathar.
Yeah, absolutely. All of those things, those dudes should show up.
Yeah. But that's, I forget, Forgotten Realms has enough breadth that you could do anything in it.
Yeah.
But it has enough specificity that you could do the guest stars and the settings. And, like, when they first see Waterdeep, it'd be very cool.
Right. Undermountain. Right. The Drow City.
But you're not stuck having... I'm about to start running a Rime of the Frostmaiden campaign, and what I'm realizing as I do backstories for characters is, man, there's a lot of world there where it's like, if you look for something, it exists. And it's not like... You're like, oh, that's a very, very Forgotten Realmsy. Like, you can work almost anything into it.
Yeah.
So it's
true.
A good
political intrigue,
yeah.
Jungle adventures.
Yeah. You can do
ancient
all that.
Ruins. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if they'll do that or not, but it may be a matter of them not wanting to pay Ed Greenwood, who created Forgotten Realms. But then they'll have to pay whoever creates the new setting. So
how much would they have to pay? These guys, nobody's ever been a billionaire off of RPGs. You could probably give Ed Greenwood, like $500?
He's a gamer, so I'm like, he's like, we'll give you a lifetime supply of Mountain Dew and Doritos.
And here's a 50.
He's like, truly, this is a great boon.
The bounty I have seen before me, so mighty.
In our version, Ed Greenwood is a wizard. Either the fantasy wizard doesn't understand money.
Listen, he can probably appreciate that. And it's probably more than TSR ever gave him. Yeah.
Paramount Plus just rolls up to the bag of silver. There you go, your silver pieces. We also have a ruby worth 12 gold.
You have to sell it, though.
Zounds!
I do hope this comes off.
Yeah.
Because if it comes off, it would be the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, one of the earliest cartoons that I really bonded with was that D&D cartoon. And I watched it when I didn't have D&D in my life otherwise, so it was kind of like my gateway to D&D. It had free rent in my head kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
For ages. If they could pull this off with the D&D thing... It's also, like, the best advertising D&D could ever get. A Critical Role, arguably, the best advertising you could get.
Yep.
But a good, fun series that would kind of get people on board and where people were like, I love the thief guy and, you know, all this stuff about it. That Beholder dude was so great. What a great villain. It would also be the best advertising.
I feel like we're on the cusp of it because D&D, we've always talked about how WotC was just leaving money on the table.
Sure.
Not having D&D toys. And movies and cartoons and all this kind of stuff.
Yep.
And you know, the MCU just kind of exploded. Like, there were no superhero movies, and then everyone's complaining that's all there is now.
Yeah.
I feel like D&D could have the same thing.
They could go,
like,
and stomp on
where
things.
Where all of a sudden, basically, there's a D&D movie, and then everybody wants their own fantasy franchise.
That there's a bunch of D&D movies with a shared universe that's the Planescape area, whatever they call that city of planes. Where there's, like, there's a Dragonlance movie, there's a Dark Sun movie, there's an Eberron movie.
This all seems possible.
Because, honestly, that would be awesome. Like, you get all those actors going, and you actually do what the... what's the city where that connects all the different
Sigil.
Places? Sigil. And then you actually have, like, Raistlin come through Sigil and go to Dark Sun or whatever. Or you have a movie that's all about some people going around to the different worlds.
I don't know how the audiences compare, but you know how, like, they start plugging all these Easter eggs in for, like, comics fans?
Yeah.
There are so many Easter eggs you can do for gaming fans, like deep cuts like that. And
absolutely.
I don't know. I'm excited about the possibilities. I also feel like it's possible it'll just come to nothing, just like every other D&D thing that's been in development. But
braced for it.
But they've got a lot of talent on this and people who've been doing
streaming
good stuff.
Streaming is the right era for it. It could come off.
Yep. Speaking of things that aren't going to happen, Dakota Johnson has been cast to play Madame Web in a standalone Madame Web movie. And I don't know, you might be saying, who the hell is Madame Web?
Spider-Man readers and possibly Russell know what's up.
No, you don't, because you think you know who Madame Web is. You think it's the old lady in the chair.
But it's sexy.
But it's Julia Carpenter.
Yeah, it's Julia Carpenter.
The second Spider-Woman has become Madame Web.
Yep, okay, sure.
It's an interesting character. Dan Slott made good use of her, I think. It's a good, she had a good costume. She had several good costumes.
Is she
actually
the daughter of Madame Web?
No, she got the powers from Madame Web. Okay. Madame Web died, and she got the powers.
Just for those who don't know, Madame Web is a powerful psychic in the Spider-Man universe with ties to him.
She's like a precog type.
Yep.
She's not a.
She is most famously, perhaps, was the MacGuffin in the big Juggernaut story in the 80s, where the Juggernaut was coming to get her so that she could, the Black Tom could use her. For nefarious purposes, and Spider-Man just tried to stop her.
You're stretching the definition of the word famously there. Famous to us.
Listen, that is a famous story in Spider-Man history.
It's great. I love it.
I'm wondering how they do an entire movie about Madame Web, because it's not an exciting premise.
And also they're not using Spider-Man in it, right? Isn't that the thing with all of these?
I feel like
Although, why not? Can Sony not do Spider-Man movies?
They have the rights. They can do whatever Spider-Man they could bring in.
I mean, there's talk of doing
Bring Andrew Garfield in a Spider-Man.
Yeah, let Tom Holland. People want him. Go ahead and have him in there. Yeah. But, like, yeah, Madame Web as a focus character, weird. But here's the thing, Randy. You seem convinced it won't exist, but Morbius is at least, it's happening.
It's happening.
Venom has happened and been successful.
Yep.
So there's reason to believe that this could happen.
I don't know. Sinister Six was in development hell, and then finally was to put the nail in that one.
But that one actually sort of makes sense as being tougher because there's, like, so many moving pieces.
There's a Kraven movie coming that...
Theoretically.
That has... it's already going to start.
They announced so many that I don't have any faith in them, but... I guess also the thing is, like, if they do it, is it going to suck? Because you know how I feel about Venom.
Probably not
going to
be great.
I just... The thing is, I can see a Madame Web movie that would be good. I just don't think Sony can make it.
It also seems like a waste outside of Spider-Man. If she were to show up in a Spider-Man movie,
I
think that'd be cool. Most of these characters, I like them because of their interaction with Spider-Man. I like them as villains or allies or whatever.
The only one I'm interested in is one that probably still isn't going to get made is the Silver Sable Black Cat movie.
Yeah.
Because if they did, I can see a good version of that. I don't know if Sony could make it, but I can imagine it. Whereas a lot of these, I'm like, I can't imagine a good Morbius movie. Definitely not with Jared Leto in the lead role.
I actually think the trailers for that look all right.
Yeah, and Jared Leto's...
Y'all tell me how it is.
It might reach, like, Venom.
Randy, didn't you like Jared Leto in that serial killer movie?
Yes.
Okay, that's all.
Against my will.
We're done, Your Honor. No more questions.
All right. They just gave us a cast and director for American Born Chinese, which is a Jean Lin Yang graphic novel, which I really enjoyed. It's basically, I think it is the story of him, like, as a kid, but there's some fantasy elements in it as well. The cast is pretty phenomenal. It's Michelle Yeoh is in there, and
she's in everything.
Yeah, it's being done on Disney Plus. It's got Daniel Wu, Ben Wang, Ki Hoi Kwan. Ki Hoi Kwan says Everything Everywhere All at Once, and as a child he starred in Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom. I assume that was not Short Round, but it could be. I don't know.
There's not a lot of young actors from...
I mean, he could have been one of the kids in the slave mines.
Yeah, I guess so, but those were, like, probably mostly, I'm going to guess, Indian actors.
I don't know.
But that said, they were, like, in, what, China? Shanghai?
No, that's Short Round.
Oh, that's Holy awesome. Shit. I didn't know he was still acting.
That's so cool.
That's
Maybe
cool.
he doesn't do a ton of acting, but
yeah,
that's great.
He's also in Everything Everywhere All at Once, the Michelle Yeoh...
That's what I was noting. Yeah, that's the upcoming kind of wild-looking... That isn't that from A23?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, her weird time travel movie. Nick, you said Michelle Yeoh is in everything, and you know what? She's one of those people who deserves to be in everything.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm not complaining.
She improves all the... Yeah, and I know you weren't. She improves all the things she's in.
I'm so excited for her in The Witcher upcoming thing.
And it's going to be...
they're going to waste her in The Witcher?
Like they wasted her in Star Trek.
Oh, snap.
Destin Daniel Cretton, who is the director of Shang-Chi, he is going to be the director of this, or one of the directors.
Okay.
So basically, I'm trying to think if the premise is anywhere on here.
That's a huge thing for Jean Lin Yang, getting a Disney Plus series for her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so this is an average American teen who's trying to carve out who he is, and a new boy from Taiwan joins his class. And he doesn't want to be associated with him because he's trying to be the American Chinese. And then he's entangled in a battle of Chinese mythological gods. There's the Monkey King. So that's pretty great. It's fun and funny and clever. I'm really excited to see this being developed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Stephen King's Later is getting a limited series from Blumhouse. I don't know anything about this one.
I saw this floating around, but I have never read the story.
It's Stephen King's world. We're just living in it.
Is this one of his, like, hard-boiled things?
How or many
is this...
good Stephen King projects have there been?
Lately, it's a higher track record. Yeah.
But his last thing he did on Apple Plus with Clive Owen and Julia...
Lisey's
Story.
Lisey's Story.
That was disappointing.
Was it?
Just from the last 10 years, though, let's say we've got Gerald's Game. I heard The Stand was at least solid from most people who saw it.
It was okay.
Okay.
If you Mike Flanagan were involved, I'd be excited about it.
What was the one with, like, kidnapped children or whatever that was on HBO?
Kidnapped children.
I don't know, or killed children or something like that. I didn't watch it. It was apparently grim.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Y'all both watched it and talked about it.
Did we?
Yeah. It was an adaptation of some Stephen King movie or book.
I don't know.
So he said In the Tall Grass. Which
I know what you're talking about. The Outsider?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. That was not my kidnapped children, was it? No.
I mean, it kind of was. It was...
I'd forgotten.
Yeah. So, In the Tall Grass, which is the Netflix movie, I actually thought was good.
Never saw.
Dr. Sleep, very good.
Dr. Sleep's great. That's Mike Flanagan.
What was the one that was the TV show set in the city or whatever? It was a TV show. Ran a few seasons.
I don't know.
Hulu, maybe?
Oh, Castle Rock.
Castle Rock, yeah.
Hit and miss.
Yeah, but I remember y'all talking about some hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's
y'all like the Kathy Bates Misery type stuff?
Yeah.
Movies were good.
I think if you compare where he is now, his adaptations, to where he was in, say, the 80s, definitely in a better place.
Yes, although ironically, the 80s were home to
some of the best ones, too, yeah.
Yeah, the overall shit record, though, yeah, oh my
was
God.
Bad, was bad. So, anyway, I don't know what Later's about. Horrible.
Yeah, you're right, Nick. The 90s was like the mangler.
I was relying on you for this premise. I don't have anything pulled up.
I don't have anything, I mean...
There's something new Stephen King coming out, is all we know.
That's what you know.
yes.
And it's from Blumhouse, who does stuff. They're doing a Mortal Kombat sequel from the writer of the TV show The Exorcist, which I think
Mortal
David
Kombat
liked.
To the most recent...
Yes, the most recent movie, the really bad one.
I did like The Exorcist TV show. I did not like Mortal Kombat.
No, it was really bad.
I'm aware of people liking it. I don't understand.
No.
I can't figure... Who can understand the mind of a madman? You know, like, at this point, I'm not even particularly, like, I guess if it was, like, really good, it might, since the first one didn't even get to the contest, right? Wasn't it about them trying to kill them on the way to it?
Yeah.
I guess this could essentially be a soft reboot, and I don't know how that did. I think it did, okay, maybe?
I think it did. I mean, it was released during the pandemic on HBO, so.
Right. So I guess, like, if they could pull it off, maybe I'd be interested, but as it stands, I'm ready to stick with my schlocky one and the kind of fun TV show that they did spinning off of that.
I forgot about that.
Proof of concept movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the weird, super grim and gritty one.
And then Catherine Zeta-Jones is going to be in the National Treasure series on Disney Plus, which I forgot was happening.
Yeah, same here. She's going to be the villain, you said, Nick?
I think that is what it was alluding to.
I feel like she'd be good for that role.
She makes sense, yeah. You remember the first Catherine Zeta-Jones thing, The Phantom?
I never saw it.
She plays like a female aviatrix villain. She's like the femme fatale.
Sounds like a good role.
She's great in it. Anyway, I want her to play the new, like, more mature version of that. I want her to be the swashbuckling lady.
But she has to, like, be a person who uses knowledge of history evilly.
Yes, yeah. Or maybe like Tia Carrera's character from True Lies.
Yeah, sure.
That would make more sense, I think.
A rival treasure hunter who only cares about the money.
I mean, that's what Sean Bean was, but with less sexy.
Yeah. So maybe she's going to play sexy Sean Bean. Maybe she's the reincarnated Sean Bean.
This was a rare case where Sean Bean didn't die.
Oh, he just didn't. Someone's not dead? I just assumed he was dead.
Someone's got to go to jail, Ben.
Oh. Maybe they're using face-off technology.
The second in command.
This is spiraling out of control.
And, Sean Bean is out in the world as Catherine Zeta-Jones, while the actual actor Sean Bean plays Catherine Zeta-Jones' character in prison, being like, "I don't belong here. I'm a sexy FBI agent."
Go on.
That's all I have so far, but don't worry, I'll send you my fan.
I'll workshop it. I think we have we have an interest in a. We are fans of the National Treasure movies. Yep. They're ridiculous and fun.
Yep.
We hope that the show pulls it off, and I guess Disney has been doing pretty good with Mighty Ducks and other stuff y'all told me about. So maybe so. It's weird to think of it without the driving creative force that is Nicolas Cage.
It's true.
But
I bet he'll have a cameo.
We hope he'll have a cameo.
Not like Disney doesn't have money.
Right.
Not like Nicolas Cage doesn't do anything for money.
I was going to say that guy needs to get out of debt or whatever, probably.
He needs to buy another dinosaur bone.
I will say, as a streaming fan, I think I've been surprised how much like Disney Plus, Apple Plus, and Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
I thought none of these were going to have anything to offer me, and they are kind of the highlights of content right now.
Yeah, and Hulu's battling in
Hulu's,
there, too.
Hulu's doing some good stuff. The HBO Max is the big loser, I think. HBO Max does not have a lot. For how much more it costs than everything else.
Yeah, but they do have Peacemaker right now.
They have Peacemaker, which is great. But they're still all fighting against the daddy of streaming, which is Netflix.
Yeah.
And Netflix is, like, doing more and more movies, too.
Yes.
And they just released a trailer for the, like, 28 movies. This isn't all of them, but there are 28 movies in 2022 that they did a big teaser for.
Yep.
Intercutting. Weirdly, with every giant actor they've got, which seems to be everyone, talking to the camera and shilling for Netflix.
Breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
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 In one case, calling it out.
Yeah. Pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
Pretty entertaining.
So, I'm just going to run through this stuff. I found an article that lists the movies. Jennifer Lopez in The Mother, an assassin who comes out of hiding to protect the daughter she abandoned earlier in life.
Yep.
Which looks like an action-y. The Adam Project, which is Ryan Reynolds reuniting with Free Guy's Shawn Levy. He's a time-traveling pilot who teams up with his younger self and his late father to come to terms with his past while saving the future. Looks fun.
So a more action-packed version of Frequency.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll watch it. It's soon. It's like March 11th.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. Day Shift, which is
Jamie Foxx
and Dave Franco, a fighting horror vampires. Comedy fighting vampires.
Yep,
or a vampire maybe. The Gray Man, which is taking away the title from Red Notice of the most expensive movie ever made by Netflix.
Yeah, but this is also Chris Evans...
a former CIA agent being hunted by an international fugitive. Chris Evans, Ana de Armas is in it. And, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling.
I can't remember if Ryan Gosling is the...
Who, Ryan Gosling?
Oh, Evans is the bad guy.
Ryan Gosling is the
CIA agent. It looks like a big action thing.
I will say that Ryan Gosling has not been in a movie in quite some time.
Has he not?
I think First Man was his last one that he did.
Was he retired just like, what's his name?
I don't think he was retired. I think
the guy just can't find work. There's no interest in a handsome, talented young leading actor.
It is tricky. Yeah, I feel bad for him.
I've been there.
This is the Russo brothers.
Yeah, it's the Russo brothers.
Oh, okay. Well, now you got my interest.
Well, I mean, so the Russo brothers also did that movie Cherry.
Which was terrible. Really awful.
Oops. What was that about?
A drug-addicted Desert Storm vet played by Tom Holland who starts robbing banks.
I remember
it should have been good. It was terrible.
Yeah, it was bad.
What else we got? Rainer, are you going to name all 28 of these?
No, I'm just writing down the ones that look cool.
Okay.
There's another sci-fi one with Chris Hemsworth.
That's Spiderhead, which was called Escape from Spiderhead until they decided to shorten the title.
Okay.
I only know this because I listened to a movie podcast and this was one they were talking about a while ago.
Okay, so you remember how Jason Momoa was wearing horns and looked to us and I was like, what the hell is that?
Looked like a character out of Saga.
That is tied to Slumberland, which, Nick, you pegged it. This is based on Little Nemo in Slumberland.
Oh,
okay.
That's cool.
Jason Momoa is Flip, who is atop a magical lighthouse, Dave.
Go on.
He's beckoning audiences to go places your dreams can't dream of.
Ooh, this is a show for potheads.
So, it's the director who did I Am Legend, The Hunger Games, and Constantine.
That's an up and down.
It's a mix. But it looked pretty.
Yeah.
Let's see. We talked about Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. There's a... This is a great title. They clone Tyrone. It's Jewel Taylor's feature film directorial debut. I don't know who that is.
No.
It's got John Boyega, Jamie Foxx, and Tiana Paris.
So, really good cast.
Yeah, we don't know much about it. There's The School for Good and Evil, which is based on a novel, which I'm guessing is YA.
Yeah.
But it looks like
Harry Potter magicians-ish kind of territory.
Charlize Theron plays the Lady Lesso, and Kerry Washington plays Professor Dovey, and Michelle Yeoh plays Professor Anemone.
Are they like, what's it called? School
for Good and Evil.
Okay. Is it, they almost like, there was a little bit of a Disney princesses vibe?
A little bit.
Like, not literally Disney princesses, but like maybe analogs or fairy tale.
I think everybody wants the Harry Potter money without the turf part.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So, glad they're doing Enola Holmes 2. Really liked Enola Holmes.
Yeah, I never got around to that one.
It was fun. I liked it.
That's what's her name from Stranger Things as the niece of Sherlock Holmes. As Sherlock Holmes, I don't even know.
So, Hustle is interesting. It's got Queen Latifah, Robert Duvall, and Adam Sandler. It's a sports comedy, and Sandler's like a washed-up baseball scout. I'm not a Sandler fan, but if he can channel a little bit of that, what's the movie? The Diamond movie.
Uncut Gems.
A little bit of that, it could be good.
In the brief glimpse I had on there, that was what it made me think of.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is a very dark movie. That is a messed up, anxious, high anxiety, stressful movie that I super like.
There's a bunch of stuff. Oh, there's one called You People, which is from Blackish creator Kenya Barris. Have you guys ever watched his show on Netflix? Not Blackish, but the other one that's like about him.
No,
like,
I don't think
it's
I
basically
did.
His Curb Your Enthusiasm. He does a lot of what he does in Blackish, but without the network street, and it's self autobiographical. It's really funny and dark. So this is Eddie Murphy, Jonah Hill, David Duchovny, and Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Huh.
It follows a new couple and their families who find themselves examining modern love and family dynamics amongst clashing cultures, societal expectations, and generational differences. I'm curious about it.
Which one is this called?
This is called You People.
Oh, okay.
And then we saw the Sea Beast, which is, it looks like, oh, it's the director from Big Hero 6, that makes sense. Which looks like a big giant sea monster and looked super cool.
Yeah, it was cool looking.
Also The Bubble, which is Judd Apatow's new movie.
Oh, nice.
Starring Karen Gillan, Iris Apatow, Fred Armisen, David Duchovny, Keegan-Michael Key,
wow,
Leslie Mann, and Maria Bakalova.
Yeah, they do seem to, Netflix does seem to have backed up the money truck and been like, hey, we want everyone.
Yes.
And then, of course, at the very end, they did the crowd pleaser and gave us a quick shot of Knives Out 2.
Is Knives Out 2, as it... I thought I saw it from the trailer. Is it, like, set on a boat?
Like it's set on a boat?
A cruise liner? It's set in Greece.
A star-studded cast boarding a yacht on the shores of Spetses, Greece.
That sounds delightful.
It does.
Just a reminder...
It will probably be what Murder on the Nile could not be.
Yes. Just a reminder. Dave Bautista, Edward Norton, Janelle Monáe, Catherine Hahn, Leslie Odom Jr., Jessica Henwick, and Ethan Hawke.
That sounds good.
Man.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
And that's not... That's just a few. I mean, Netflix is like...
Probably not
like,
everybody.
Has like 50 or 60 movies that are...
Oh, yeah. The other things will just drop the week of.
How much did they pay you, Nick?
They're getting good entertainment.
As much as they paid Randy to shill for the Marvel movies. As much as they pay me to shill for all the Shakespeare movies that don't exist.
The big Shakespeare industrial complex.
Apple just dropped
Big Bard got to you.
Big Bard.
Apple dropped a Shakespeare movie.
Yeah.
I have not watched it yet.
I watched it.
Oh, that's true.
How have I, of all the people in the room, how have I watched the Shakespeare movie?
I had COVID when it came out, and I'm waiting to, like, I think watch it with a friend.
Kaylee's not a huge Shakespeare fan, so
Dave,
I think you should watch
it with COVID.
I mean, maybe so. All the death, the doom and gloom of Macbeth is something ideal to watch while you're dying.
But Denzel would have brought some gravitas.
He does. It's good.
No, I'm going to see it for sure. I'll talk about it more in some future point.
Yeah. All right. Two other trailers. They did a new trailer for Buzz Lightyear, which I wasn't going to watch, and they just bullied me into it.
Yep, and then you had to admit it's a good trailer.
And it's a good trailer. We
had been trying to figure out, is this like somehow the origin story of Toy Story?
What is it? Yeah.
Instead, it seems like it's really like kind of taking him and putting him in a, almost like his own high concept, Buzz Lightyear is a real dude kind of story.
Chris
space
Evans
opera.
Playing him.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it is like CG like Pixar, but it's a kind of a CG that looks a little bit more realistic, you know, characters... are cartoony, but on the realistic side of cartoony.
Also has a little bit of, like, Buck Rogers.
I mean, totally, in that sense that Buzz always does, but, like they're running with it.
They're stranded on a planet. They're trying to get out. They're sort of forming, like, technology to escape it.
It looks like they were a Star Command, like, unit or something, and they wound up on an alien planet. They've got, like, they've got a fence keeping the aliens out.
Yep.
And there's alien tentacles that keep trying to drag people out in the desert. And they've built some kind of ship. They're doing some kind of test to try to get them home.
Yep. And Buzz Lightyear has a little robotic kitty companion that looks like it's going to be the scene stealer.
Oh, yeah.
That can dispense white noise.
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely felt a little... someone was like, hey, could you do another Baymax for us so we can...
But it also feels like that's its connection in a way to Toy Story.
Yeah.
Is just to have like a slightly silly robot toy that he interacts with.
We also do see Zurg.
There's a redesigned Zurg, and he's like a badass scary guy.
Yes. It actually looked quite fun. It was the trailer I needed to see too, Randy. I was like, I wanted to see it just to see Zurg's redesign. But I had no particular enthusiasm for this, and now I have the enthusiasms for
this. Is it just because there's a robot cat, Dave?
No. I like sci-fi Buck Rogers.
It looks fun. This trailer got
me. The animation is like really pretty good.
The first trailer was like space exploration kind of thing.
They made out like he was like going up on like a NASA ship, and it was like the right stuff. And there is like they're gonna clearly vibe off of that a little bit, but like once it's like it's kind of a more futuristic NASA, and once they're up into space, it's like. There's, like, space bases and
this
stuff.
This looks like more fun action adventure.
So you would say that this trailer has the right stuff.
I guess.
I also like the use of Starman by David Bowie.
Yeah.
I thought it was... I liked it.
I think I've heard it a little too often lately.
I get that.
I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen it in some other trailer, too.
It's been used. It's definitely been used.
It turns out people like David Bowie a lot.
But but it is a great song to drop into, like, these kind of things. It was used in The Martian, too.
That's
yes,
right.
It was.
Yep. And then finally, speaking of trailers that kind of got me on board, we have the new trailer for Halo over on Paramount Plus. And I have zero affection. I have negative affection for Halo because my connection with Halo is that one of Ross's friends, when they were young, when they were like 10, spent $60 to buy Halo on my Xbox, which I would have rather spent at that time on any other game.
Yeah.
And so I had Halo because Ross's dumb friend bought it, and Ross didn't realize they'd done it. So I have that's my association with Halo. It's a dumb game that took away a game on my.
Did you ever play it, Randy?
Played a little bit. Didn't like it.
Okay. However, it looks like Paramount Plus is like rolling up the bank.
They dropped some money on this. But also, like their story, the story trailer basically of a notion of like Master Chief is like a controlled super weapon who basically in the course of this starts to develop independence. So it's not just going to be. Gung-ho warrior kills a bunch of aliens.
Yeah.
It's going to be corrupt military-industrial complex mixed in with that.
Yeah.
There's a little more complexity. There's some Spartans who are not...
They throw in just enough for the leftists to get on board.
Exactly.
And still enjoy their diehard explodies.
It also just looks like really good action.
Man, the tech looks cool.
I am more lukewarm than y'all are on this one. I feel like I don't see enough of a story to get on board, and I guess I'm not looking for like another military action show or anything right these days.
I don't know, is anybody doing military sci-fi anymore?
Not sci-fi, but like military action, like in the sense of like 24, Jack Reacher, any of that kind of stuff.
No, I put this. I'm hoping for something along the lines of Aliens and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, here.
I think because I don't know if the story of like the what is it, the Covenant or whatever. Yeah. Like I don't like all of that looks like it might as well be borderline fantasy for me, where technology is sort of just magic and stuff like that. I kind of need to see a bit more of the world building going on before I get on board.
I get that.
I will probably try it out, although what's it on?
Paramount Plus, you'll try it. It's on Star Trek show.
I guess it's on
Star
Trek.
Do you like
Star
all
Trek
the people
show.
Involved in it, though? I mean...
Man, the amount of money that they must have shown at it, thrown at it, though, because, like, this looks like a lot of shows now. Like, Star Trek does.
It looks like a movie.
It looks like full movie budget.
Well, and the guy playing Master Chief is Pablo Schreiber.
All right.
Is that somebody?
From The Wire, among other things.
Yeah, Wire and a few other, like...
I say this just mainly jokingly, but, like, the dude never takes his helmet off. Who cares who you cast?
But
tell that to Pedro Pascal.
I know. That's why I said I say it jokingly.
He's not going
to... Also, you want... Even a voice actor needs to be a good actor. Yeah. I know this.
And I know
they're making fun of it.
You don't want Gilbert Gottfried under that helmet.
Hey, they busted out... We gotta stop this covenant.
Well, I'm Master Chief.
Well, the thing is that he will be out.
Let's rock and roll.
He will be out of the armor.
Are they going to show his face?
Yeah, they even show, like, from his back.
That looked like the kind of teasing you do with Judge Dredd.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to see
his face. Well, I mean,
I don't think you're going to see his face.
They basically said that Bokemomba and the guy who plays Master Chief grew up together.
Yeah, but I bet we don't see him.
It's
kind of like Judge Dredd. You don't want to show him out of the helmet.
I don't think they're going to go that route. I bet.
I'm 100% sure they will.
I'm pretty sure they will,
too. I'll take the bet.
All right. Okay. It's a lunch on it.
Yep.
Sure.
All right.
I think they will tease it. You'll catch little glimpses of him. You could even see a flashback
all the other
to childhood. All the other Spartans.
Yeah, all the other Spartans.
They will all play that role, and he will be the Mandalorian, except not even as out as the Mandalorian, who took his helmet off and gotten busted.
Right, he took his helmet off, and then he lost.
And then later on, they're like, did you ever take your helmet off? And he's like, about that.
He's like, I gotta go.
I actually predict that this is going to do quite well for Paramount.
We'll
launch them up a little bit.
The interesting thing about it on a just speculation of a success level is that Halo is not presently the force that it was 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
But it's also not nothing.
But it does have a group of people who are diehard about it.
Sure, there's freaks out there. but also not just that, but people have super fond memories.
Yep.
Like, Mortal Kombat is not the powerhouse it was in the 90s, and there's still a Mortal Kombat movie.
It's true.
It's a bad movie.
But I have a feeling it's probably going to do pretty well. I suspect the talent behind it will kind of come through.
So be sure and subscribe to Paramount Plus, the sci-fi network, essentially.
Yeah, sci-fi and westerns.
The good sci-fi.
Sci-fi and westerns, yes.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, February 9th, and I'm gonna load us up with the new stuff first. It is, like I say, we only got a partial shipment this week, so it may be a little short segment.
Right.
We may not take a break. We may just roll right into topics.
Yep.
But we'll give you spoiler warnings if we're going to do spoilers. Marvel's new thing this week is Maestro World War M, which is the end of Peter David's trilogy of leading up to the Maestro stories.
Yep, for Hulk fans know Maestro as his evil future incarnation, and I gather these have been received pretty well.
So this one pits the Maestro up against
are flashbacks, right, showing how he came to power?
Yes. So he beat, apparently, I didn't read the last one, apparently beat Dr. Doom in the last one.
Yeah.
So Doom is, like, recovering in Latveria, but Namor, who is, like, pretty happy that the surface world has lost all its domination, he recruits the Abomination.
Okay.
To take out the Maestro, so the Maestro doesn't bring humanity back to any kind of provenance and ruin his Atlantean good times.
Okay.
And it looks like he may wind up working with Dr. Doom on that, which Namor's done in the past.
Yeah, that sounds like something he would do. I kind of like that.
And there's also one of the weapons that Namor sends against him is another character that Namor has a connection with.
It was a cool reveal.
It's a cool reveal. So, yeah, kind of fun. No, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you later. All right. But that was a pretty fun. And then DC's got a couple new ones. They have the Strange Love Adventures. They've been doing these, like, $10 anthology books.
They're holiday specials that they do. Like, there's a hot Christmas one that comes out. This is their Valentine's.
This one, of course, is for Groundhog's Day. Oh, Valentine's. And it's got a bunch of stories. Harley Quinn's in it. Gorilla Grodd, Sergeant Rock,
Jaime Reyes, the Blue Beetle,
Peacemaker.
Yep.
And closes out with a Rom V and Phil Hester Batman story.
Yeah. So that's actually kind of fun sounding. I'm going to try and sit down sometime this week and give some of those a read.
There's some good art in this. I noticed there's a Devin Grayson story with Roger Robinson on art, which is a sort of an old school artist, I think.
Okay.
But there's a lot of new talent, like new names in the writers and artists. So it's like, you may get a little six or eight pager in here, who eventually becomes like one of the A-listers who you like.
I kind of like the cartoony art on the Blue Beetle one.
Yeah.
The slightly more cartoony take on it. It just looks cool.
There's a new Black Label book. It's a big oversized. It's called Suicide Squad Blaze. It's by Simon Spurrier. Has art from Aaron Campbell, who's doing sort of a Maleev-type riff, kind of a darker storytelling. But basically, the premise of this was really interesting. Waller comes to her main Suicide Squad of, like, Peacemaker, Harley Quinn, Boomerang, and King Shark, and is like, hey, we got this new technology. we can boost your powers up, but it's going to kill you in a few months. And they're like, yeah, no, we'll pass.
Uh-huh.
So they bring in new recruits. They recruit other criminals, like regular criminals, and they're going to give them the power. So it's been that Strike Force Moritori, make a 40-year-old cultural reference, where basically these guys are going to get powers, and then it will kill them.
Okay.
It's a neat premise.
Yeah, I like it.
And they're paired up with that Suicide Squad on missions to take out some kind of dangerous enemy, which I don't know what the dangerous enemy is. It's some kind of dangerous metahumans, maybe.
All right.
But it's a pretty interesting premise.
I hope they stop the dangerous enemy.
I hope they don't. other than that, new show Moon Knight, which is a tie to Devil's Reign and focuses on Hunter's Moon, the other Moon Knight.
Yep.
And Stained Glass Scarlet, a Moon Knight villain who is actually dead. Mm-hmm. They do sort of a reinvention here that I thought was really, really good. It's a great standalone issue. If you haven't been reading the Moon Knight book, but you're reading Devil's Reign, this would be a good one to check out. Devil's Reign number 4 comes out this week. It's great.
Yeah.
There's a big reveal at the end.
Yeah, talk about
that. I'm really, really enjoying Devil's Reign. These events are always a little tricky. You know, I think we've liked a lot of them. And then they always seem to drop the ball.
Well, Zdarsky...
But Zdarsky's been really good.
He also just handles the characters the way they should. Like, everyone feels like who they are.
This has the young Nova in Sam.
Yeah, it has the champions.
It has the champions in there.
So the champions, okay, yeah. And I wouldn't think, like, oh, Zdarsky is an obvious writer for the champions, but he handles them well.
Yeah, he handles Miles well. I mean, there's just, like... a whole host of Marvel characters that he just gets.
All right, Zdarsky, don't bend us out on us. You gotta hold it together, man.
I have a fair amount of faith that Zdarsky can deliver here.
He's shown that he kind of gets it in a way that, unfortunately, Bendis never did. It was kind of fun to see Bendis subvert things and put his stamp on them.
Yep.
And especially, I think, Daredevil was a fit for his sort of crime impulses and stuff like that. But he never kind of seemed to fully get it.
I don't want to turn this podcast into a place where I don't want to just spend a bunch of time bashing on Bendis. I'm going to let Dave do it this week.
That's right.
Just know that I stand behind every one of his remarks.
United in hatred.
Amazing Spider-Man brings back the Slingers. Nick, you and I remember these guys.
Yeah, it was weird to see them.
The 90s era?
Yeah.
No, early 2000s, right?
Oh, right, you're right.
Early 2000s.
So there were four of them, and they had different costumes. They were all good costumes. None of them felt like Spider-Man. I'm not sure why he was...
Was he mentoring them?
He was adopting the identities. Like, he was wearing the costumes, I think.
Oh, okay.
But he was pretending to have different powers or something. It was weird.
It was.
But so now, Hobie Brown, a.k.a. the Prowler, is in the Hornet costume, which is like the lead guy. And Dusk and Ricochet, the two others, are involved in this in a different way.
I always liked Ricochet. He has a fun...
Ricochet is my favorite of the costumes,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, the costume is great.
He's got, like, the black leather coat.
And he's got all
like,
the discs on his,
discs
on his arms.
A, but to double check, these are all Spider-Man.
But they're not now. They're different people.
What?
Yeah. Well,
it makes sense now, kind of knowing what I know about Ben Reilly's...
They previously became new people.
Well, and they've shown up occasionally. Like, one of them showed up in Runaways, like, during Ron's run. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. That was a deep cut. Yeah.
But anyway, they're good costumes. I'm glad they use the characters, and they do some interesting stuff with Beyond here. Like, if this is one of their .bay issues, if this is a pitch for a Slingers book, I would read that book. I thought this was a really good... Hobie Brown has always been an interesting character where he was a cat burglar, but he made good.
Yep.
And then he keeps getting drawn back into it.
Yep.
I really liked it. The Joker... I thought this was only a 12-issue series, but it is definitely not finished here.
Okay.
But there's some big stuff as Gordon's making his move. He's figured out who he's working for. He does some cool sort of bluffing thing. There's a big reveal in it.
Well, we've been pretty on board this book from James Tynion from the beginning.
Yeah.
I got behind one of those weeks when, you know, we didn't get all our books or they were late or whatever. But I'm planning to do some catch-up on this soon.
I know
you've been reading some of the Tynion's other Batman or earlier collections and pretty impressed with them. So.
Yeah, actually, I took the Batman Volume 2 Joker War came out this week, which I've not read. I started reading Tynion's Batman after Joker, so I started with like issue 101.
Yeah.
And he had been on for like a year or two at that point. So I went back and read their Dark Designs, which is his first run.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read the Joker War that came out this week, and I really loved them. I think... Dark Designs is kind of what everybody likes about Hush and Long Halloween. It's like, it's a Joker Riddler, Catwoman, Penguin are all involved. And it is a story of another villain called the Designer.
Yeah.
And it is it sort of flashes back to the early days of those characters. And the Designer had basically the Designer was a guy who was like this criminal mastermind, like the Kaiser Soze type. And he's a planner. And basically he called them all in their early days together and was like, hey, what is your ultimate crime? So Catwoman describes it as her biggest heist. Penguin had a thing that would make him mayor. Riddler had this thing that made him the smartest guy in town and basically took out the police department. And Joker was so terrifying that the Designer was like, shut the whole thing down. And then now later, like, the Designer has come back to life and seems to be enacting all these plans, which is like how Batman loses his fortune. And Penguin winds up sort of an uneasy ally with Catwoman and Batman for a while.
Okay.
That
sounds like a lot of fun dynamics going on.
It's really, really good and has a lot of good twists and turns. And, you know, Tinian gets those moments.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of those.
The Joker
moments.
Had like about 8 of those moments in the first issue alone, where I was like, "Oh, what a cool idea! Oh, look, I never thought about that." Oh.
And he also does. This is right after King had killed off Alfred, which I hate.
Yeah,
but he does some good stuff with it.
And weirdly, like, it was kind of unremarkable in King's run.
Yeah,
like, King's run is pretty well liked.
Yeah,
I'll give it that. But like, somehow Alfred managed to die, and nobody seemed to care.
Yeah.
Other than there was like, "Huh, really?" But there have been some good stories written afterwards.
They've paid it off. I mean,
Nightwing.
Tom Taylor and James Tynion picked up that ball and ran with it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, the Volume 2 of Joker War basically is Joker going all out against Batman. I don't want to reveal what his... Something at the end of Dark Designs gives Joker an advantage he's never had before. And results in Joker basically tearing into Gotham. It's spectacularly good. I was really impressed. And Tynion... I'm really liking his stuff. Anyway,
what's the name of his first volume of Batman? If people want to check it out,
They're Dark Designs.
They're Dark Designs,
and it's a big oversized trade. Like, it's a good read. The Joker, by the way, I feel like the Joker easily could have been called a Gordon book, but Tynion knew full well like nobody's going to buy a Commissioner Gordon
book.
Right,
that's how you sell it.
But it is very much a Commissioner Gordon book.
Yeah, yep.
And it's Commissioner Gordon at his most badass.
Yep.
Barbara Gordon is also in there being cool.
Like, but I will say, like it's not like the Joker is not a part of it.
No,
and
he is.
And like, insights into him, but it's almost like how in Silence of the Lambs, it's really a Jodie Foster movie.
Yeah.
It's her character. What's that character's name?
Clarice Starling.
Yep. When she's analyzing Hannibal Lecter or he's on screen, he commands it.
Yep.
And they cleverly made the Joker book work similarly.
Yeah, I think Silence of the Lambs is a perfect comparison. I had to think that was an influence here. And then Superman Son of Kal-El this week, which is great, as always.
It's the sort of a second part of a crossover that had Aquaman in it.
Yep.
That's a newer Aquaman.
Yeah. Not a crossover, he's just guest starring.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't have to read any other books.
That's true.
Yeah.
And that's really the ideal way to do it.
Yeah, although they're about to do a Superman Nightwing crossover, which I'm perfectly happy about.
This had one of the most, I think, sympathetic threats I've seen.
A big
Leviathan monster from like the depths.
Yeah,
it's very sad, and like people are beating this thing up, and it's clearly like an animal.
Tom Taylor just
and it's being
to,
hurt.
He managed to make me care about a giant faceless crab thing, which is impressive.
Yeah, I need the what are they from? The island of
Dr. Moreau.
Gamora.
Yeah,
I need those guys to get wiped off the face of the earth, and I need Bendix, not Bendis.
No,
but Bendix.
Yeah,
to get his ass beat.
Yeah. I do think Tom Taylor has a maybe he could do a Monarch book.
What's that?
The kaiju investigating people.
Oh yeah.
He could do a Monarch book.
I'd be on board that.
And the other one I'm missing this number one, Nick, because I want to leave it for you, but Secret X-Men number one.
Yeah, it's Tini Howard doing a Shi'ar and X-Men team up book.
Oh,
it's just a one shot.
No.
Yeah, it's a one-shot.
Oh, is it a one-shot?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Unless the solicit lied to me when I made the sign.
No, but this deals with a Deathbird and a threat against the Shi'ar Empire. So
it's an interesting team, too. Isn't it like Banshee?
Well, it's
Mara.
All the people who lost the vote to get into the main X-Book. So, yeah, it's Strong Guy, Forge, Banshee, Armor, Boom Boom, Tempo, Marrow, Cannonball, and Sunspot.
There's a lot of new mutants in that team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the leader, in quotation marks, is Sunspot, because he thinks himself as a leader now.
Okay, all right. That's interesting.
He ran a corporation.
Sure. Flintstones.
My experience, people who run corporations always think they're the leader.
Oh, yes. the Flintstones hardcover by Mark Russell and Steve Pugh coming out this week. That's the entire series.
We've talked about it before. Yeah. It has like a sort of archly satiric side to it. It was not just a recreation of Flintstones. It was a recreation of Flintstones that made jokes about like stuff you would never believe they would make jokes about.
Yeah, the notion of like the Cro-Magnons being wiped out in like a Vietnam-style war.
Yeah, and Fred saying, we committed war crimes, Bonnie.
Yeah, like, and also like there was an issue where some people were trying a radical new society-breaking...
Monogamy. Right. They're like, oh, you know, the caveman way is, of course, everybody sleeps with everybody. And they're like, apparently people are trying monogamy now.
it was very funny. And one of the early things I think we read from Mark Russell.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely his breakout project. And now he's become kind of the wag, the satirist of comics. Yeah.
And then, of course, very notable, we got a restock of Mouse. Which you might have heard a little bit about. Tennessee school district tried to ban it and made it more popular than it's been in decades.
I think they did ban it from their school.
Yeah,
but now everybody's getting it. I don't know if this happened, but like Will Wheaton was doing a thing where he was going to buy copies and send them to any school district in Tennessee that needed them.
Yeah, there's
like,
Tennessee Comic Shop handing them out. Yeah,
yeah. It seems like a lot of people have rallied around this, not just pushing back against that sort of censorship, but also supporting a book that is really a great look at the a biographical look from the eyes of someone who experienced the Holocaust, experienced concentration camps, as seen by his son. And I always
isn't it?
Is it grandson?
Son? I think it's grandson.
That's probably right. It might be his son.
I'm not sure.
But Art Spiegelman, who's like, won a special Pulitzer Prize for this, is also now like, he's very associated with doing covers for The New Yorker. He's in the fine arts world. There are, I'm going to say, some darkly funny moments in this. I always kind of mention this as an aside, that are more about like, it's about him dealing with his kind of cranky old, slightly demented dad.
Yeah.
And it's like, God, anybody who's dealt with like, parents that are kind of a little bit out of it, or grandparents have just been frustrated with family members, will also find something to see in this that is not just the bigger picture stuff about the Holocaust.
Yeah, it's a really good read, and this is a good time if you're... I mean, a lot of people already ordered it from us.
Support free speech.
But also just to read a really great graphic novel. This is up there with, like, this is like Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, The Mouse. Yep. Like, this is some of the stuff you should...
I was late to the party on it. I didn't read it until maybe, like, 10 or 15 years ago. And I was like, oh, there's a reason why it's as revered as it is.
It's really good. And we have copies. And we have more copies on order, because I expect the order we got is going to sell out this week.
Oh, and just to answer kind of on a technicality... Mouse was originally broken up into two books, Mouse 1 and Mouse 2, two separate graphic novels. I believe this collects the entire thing.
Yeah, this is the complete edition.
Yeah, so if you have any questions about it, you're getting the whole shebang.
Which is how I read it originally. I didn't read the parts 1 and 2.
Right on.
It wasn't serialized originally, was it?
God, it might have been in Raw Magazine, which was Art Spiegelman's avant-garde comics magazine.
Yeah, interesting. But anyway, we got that back in. Nick, did I miss anything?
No, you got it.
All right. We're going to roll on to talking about some of our topics, because we don't need to do a break. And
everybody works.
We're going to talk about some TV that we've watched. First up, I think we want to talk about Pam and Tommy on Hulu. Now this, I've described this to a few people, and they're like, that's a weird thing to make a TV show out of. But I guess this is based on... an article that was done about is like the unauthorized biography of Pamela Anderson.
Is it
and
like
Tommy
Rolling
Lee.
Stone or like Vanity Fair?
It was
one of those.
It was one of those two, I think.
But it's basically about the Pam and Tommy Lee sex tape.
Yes.
Yes. If you lived through the 90s, you know about this.
So Pamela, for those who don't know,
before Kardashian sex tapes,
Pamela Anderson was a Playboy model.
Yep.
Who then became a part of the show Baywatch, which was a very popular syndicated TV show.
Right.
Tommy Lee was the drummer of a band called Motley Crue.
Yes.
And Tommy Lee, this was still very much a rock star. He's got tattoos all over him. He's got a tattoo on his abs. It's Mayhem.
Yep.
He is a king douchebag.
Sebastian Stan plays him
perfectly. Lily James plays Pamela Anderson.
Yep. Does a really good job, by the way.
And in the real world, they made a sex tape in the old camcorder type days, I guess.
But not on
right?
purpose.
Oh, I have
no. Yeah. So this is what happens. So the first episode is all about Seth Rogen playing this handyman who's building a fuck pad.
Yep.
For Tommy Lee and Pam.
Yes.
And he's doing all this work.
I really hope somebody was walking by our office as we're recording this, like maybe shopping the miniatures out there, yeah. And just to hear that word.
Yeah. Well, and he's kind of a sad sack.
He's kind of a sad sack, and basically, Tommy Lee comes in. He's this coked up, enthusiastic, but kind of a jerk, and keeps changing things on them. Keeps promising them money, and basically leaves them in the lurch. And after they've paid all this money to redesign the place, and leaves them with nothing. So they've got is bills. Very familiar story.
Yeah.
And so that's the first episode, and the second episode is showing Tommy Lee and Pam's like whirlwind courtship, where he meets her. In a club, right after he's gotten divorced.
She doesn't want to date any more bad boys.
She's not
going to
date any more bad boys. And, of course, she falls completely for him. He falls for her. They decide to get married. Like, he goes down to Mexico. She's at her modeling job. Follows her down there. Brings his boys. So brings, like... Is it Motley Crue? It's not. It's, like, his entourage. Like,
yeah, his entourage, essentially.
And so they all hang out. And he basically decides to ask her to marry him.
Mm-hmm.
They get married. There's a funny bit where they're on the plane... And they've been having all this sex. This is a very R-rated show for Hulu, by the way.
Oh, okay? Yeah, especially since the...
full frontal.
He has a conversation with his penis.
He has a conversation with CGI penis played by Jason Mantzoukas.
Yes.
Wow.
Who's trying to convince him not to get married and talks about how he could bang Carmen Electra and Denise Richards.
Yes. And, the plane ride is funny because they're stuck on a plane getting to know each other.
Yeah, and
I will say, by the way, just from married. What you've told me about Tommy Lee, and like, because I don't really know much about him... he doesn't seem like the marrying type.
Yeah. No, it's sort of childlike.
Yeah.
Like, he's basically this little douchebag, but you're like, he literally does just, like, falls head over heels for this woman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Based on the fact that she's hot.
Right.
But then, yeah, after they've been having all this sex, they're on the plane, and it's like this quiet thing, and she's like, so what movies do you like? And she's like, she's talking about romantic comedies, and he talks about horror, and it's like, oh no. And then he's like, well, what's your favorite food? And she's like, I love French fries. And he's like, I love French fries. It's like, that's the level at which these people connect.
Wow.
But anyway,
I think I might need to see this. This sounds like fun.
They make a sex tape as they start sort of taping each other. Mm-hmm. And then when the handyman comes to get his tools back, he steals the video by accident and finds out what he's got. And that's how it got leaked.
How do you steal it by accident?
Oh, doesn't steal just that. He wants payback because...
All the money he's owed.
He's all the money he's owed and also more. He steals Tommy Lee's safe.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And there's a lot in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, it's very weird. It's very funny.
It's gonna be like a one season show. Or?
Yeah, I'm sure.
There's
an
amazing performance.
It's a limited series
by Nick Offerman.
Oh, that's right. Nick Offerman is great in this.
Yes, he is the head of a porn industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much as I love Sebastian Stan, I think this may be the best thing he's done. He's great in this.
Yeah, he's really
sounds
everyone
like
is
hilarious
really good.
And trashy fun.
Yeah. This is super good. I didn't think I had any interest in it, but it's super fun.
The execution has won
you
over.
Yeah. It reminds me of sort of what I liked about, say, Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
That's sort of watching scumbags be scumbags.
It's got that level of insanity at times.
Yeah. Nick, you watch Reacher?
I did. At first, I was kind of surprised that Amazon just decided to throw the entire season on.
That is weird for them. They usually do three
and then they kind of parse it out. But this one, they're just like, no, here's all 8 episodes, I think. I
wonder if that means they are testing out...
They seem to go between. They sometimes drop full seasons.
Okay.
Well, I will say, it worked for them because they've already announced the season 2.
Yeah,
I heard this is going over very well for them.
It is. It is definitely adheres more towards the books. This one is based off of the book, The Killing Floor.
And you say more towards then, and what we're talking about is the...
The Tom Cruise movies.
Two Tom Cruise movies?
Yeah, two Tom Cruise movies, which were okay, but not amazing.
And we're clearly, like, got made because of his, like, star power, but, like, a key aspect of this guy who's, like, an ex-MP or whatever...
Yeah, he's ex-MP.
...is that he's, like, a giant dude.
He's
like,
6'5".
Super giant and super swole, and, like, yeah, like Tom Cruise can get kind of swole.
And he can be intimidating, but he can't be this kind of... he cannot be a giant.
He's the opposite of giant.
And Alan Ritchson, who everyone will know because he played Hawk on Titans,
yep.
does an amazing job of this. He kind of... he really does flesh out the character that Reacher is supposed to be as not only kind of a brute and knows how to fight, but also is, like, super smart. Like, he is a military police officer who is supposed to be basically tracking down and taking down people who are, like, SEALs and Rangers and and it's not just kind of
and he specifically I didn't notice if you mentioned this, like, he kind of lives off the grid. He doesn't have, like, his life has the most minimal paper trail.
He is Kane from Kung Fu, wandering basically doing whatever he wants,
pays in cash and stuff like that.
He gets a stipend from being honorably discharged from the military, and he doesn't really have friends. He has a brother who works in the Secret Service.
Okay.
But the cast is really, really fun. The detective in this season was the detective from iZombie.
Oh, I like that guy.
Yeah, he's great. Kristen Crook weirdly shows up as kind of a the wife of
She's the non-sex cult person.
The non-sex cult from
Although she was briefly...
They tried to bring her
into the next game. She escaped. Yeah, she escaped.
Bruce McGill, I don't know if you...
I know the name.
Yeah, he's a good character actor. Guillermo from What We Do in the Shadows shows up as a coroner.
Everywhere now.
He's hilarious. Honestly, this was a very easy watch. It has really good action and good character work. So I was very happy.
It's on my list. I have not had a chance to check it out just yet.
It's a bit of a return to kind of old school values, I think. Just I watched a little bit of it just to kind of get its vibe. In the sense of a badass lead hero.
Yeah.
A little bit different from the rest. But, you know, he fulfills many of the qualities you want in an action hero. One of those action heroes who's confident.
He's confident.
Quite confident.
He also kind of... He has his own code of ethics. Like, if you do that, you're gonna. If you do something that is, like, above and beyond, you're gonna die.
There's a kind of a fun scene in the beginning where he's, like, walking into a diner, and there's a guy walking out of the diner with his wife.
Yeah,
and they're kind of like this
like
dude
hit her or push her down.
He's pushing her, and he's kind of verbally berating her. And he just pauses walking in there, like, he just, like, it's like he just stops walking.
Yeah.
He doesn't, like, and he just, like, kind of turns his head and looks at the guy. And at some point, the guy who was there about to get into the car notices that he's looking at him, and he's like, "What are you looking at, buddy?" or whatever. And he, like...
You're like, want to fight?
He takes a few steps towards him, like he wants to get in his face, and Reacher doesn't say anything at all. He just kind of gives him this look like, okay, it's going to happen. And the dude is like... Hey, I was just kind of, it's been a bad day or whatever. And kind of like apologizes without Reacher ever doing anything.
I will say for the first like 6 or 7 minutes, he doesn't say a word.
Yeah, they actually kind of do a fun thing of like just having him completely silent and just kind of a physical presence as people try and figure out what to do with him.
Yeah, it was very much an erasing
because he's
of the,
wrongfully sort of arrested for something.
Yeah, erasing of the Tom Cruise diminutive stature.
Yes, we need to have his bigness on display for 10 minutes.
I mean, and people constantly reference of what a beast he is.
It,
so.
It is funny because, like, every comment I've seen on this, whether it's people who didn't like it or people who liked it, everybody has talked, the constant refrain is how bad Tom Cruise was his casting for this.
Well, I think it was like Tom Cruise was like shopping for that next money, next the cash cow.
Yeah.
And
was this when he was going to be on the outs of Mission Impossible? Like, he has his cash cow.
Well, yeah, but don't you remember that the whole plan was,
you know,
like,
better than a cash cow, Randy?
Jeremy Renner was going to take over for him. And then he was like, No, I'm not going to leave this. And Jerry Mariner was like, well, fuck.
Yeah. Poor Jerry
I guess
Mariner.
I'll be Hawkeye.
But now he's Hawkeye, the mayor of Kingstown.
That's true. He has definitely found another niche.
He found his niche. Dave, you want to tell us about Star Trek Prodigy since it's reached its midpoint or season one?
It was what was originally going to be the season one finale, but now marks the mid-season finale.
Okay.
It
feels pretty season finale-ish. So for those who don't know, there's basically two Star Trek animated shows right now. There's the one that was like by the former Rick and Morty guy, and it's the Lower Decks.
Yep.
And that's the one that's kind of an anarchic comedy, but with some Star Trek heart to it and some characters.
It's very Next Generation in its approach.
Correct. This is the one that was meant to be their kind of answer to like an all ages friendly, you know, more kid friendly, like kind of Last Airbender type vibe.
Yeah.
And early on, I felt like it was a little too all ages, but they kind of, I think, it even in that first season, have gotten a little bit of, well, it's still all ages, but it was
when
maybe
they
a
added
little...
Jason Mendoza as the CGI penis, that's when it became more adult.
Well, I mean, Avatar was definitely always just friendly at the very beginning, but right. it sort of but blossomed
out. But Avatar was, I think, a little bit better than this. That's just all there is to it. But I think this got better as it went along, and by the end I was quite happy with it.
This is this is Nickelodeon produced, right?
It is Nickelodeon produced. Yeah. And the premise is that there's a sort of a mystery involving this kind of alien overseer of like a mining asteroid at first that has a bunch of like young people on it, you know, ranging from sort of teenager to at least one character who's like, I guess, preteen, Rock Talk. Who's like a big kind of, you know, looks like the Thing. It looks like a female version of the Thing.
Yeah. But we don't know it's female until the very end, right?
Till at least the first episode, and, but like, what you follow is one central character who's kind of the kid who's always trying to escape. And eventually he finds out that the person who runs this mining colony, that who's called the Diviner, and has a kind of creepy General Grievous looking robot who's his enforcer.
Right.
That he was in fact been like mining and looking for this prototype starship, and it is like a very cool looking Star Trek starship called the Protostar.
It's not the Voyager, right? But it looks like the Voyager a little bit.
A little bit. It's arguably a better overall design. On the you know, Voyager is one of those ships that can look kind of weak from certain angles.
Mm-hmm.
This ship has a better overall design. And we'll find out eventually that the Protostar literally has a, like, a sort of collapsed star at its heart.
Oh, that's cool.
That allows it to do, like, kind of some crazy leaps of speed and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And that's sort of one of the big premises. So, yes, literally it is a, like, a Protostar at its heart. Oh, that is not just the name of it.
Okay. All
right. There is also another mystery surrounding it as to, like, where did it come from? Why is the Diviner after it? How did it get in this asteroid? And how does it connect later on to we see that at some point he actually had access to it, and maybe he even had control of it, and it was a ship that belonged to or was captained by Chakotay from Voyager after the events of Voyager. The kids managed to escape with it. There's about five of them, and they're a bunch of different alien species. One of them is one of those sort of pig-like aliens. He's like kind of the that was the Jason Mantzoukas voiced one that's kind of the obnoxious party dude kind of guy, but also like sort of their grease monkey engineer dude.
He
changes a little bit over time. There's an interesting thing that happens in an episode where he kind of ends up somewhat displaced, at least on the engineering side. There's the big rock girl who's like, she's the youngest of them. She seems like she's like could be like 10 or so, but she's like the strongest easily. There's the daughter of the Diviner who betrays him, Gwyn. She has a longer name, but they shorten it to Gwyn. But who's initially kind of the bad guy. And she's like a white-skinned alien who looks like the alien in Star Trek Beyond. I don't think she's that same species, but she looks like it. And there's an alien that's in sort of an encased metal sort of suit. That looks like a sort of floating probe, and that's an alien called a Medusan from an old Star Trek original series thing. Medusans, if you look on them outside of their shielded forms, drive people insane, and so they always have to be inside these shielded things. There's a big, big thing that happens with the Medusan in the final episode. Okay. And
they're cool. They look really cool, the style.
I gotta say, Dave, you're making me want to watch this, which I didn't like the first episode that much, but there was possibilities in it.
Well,
it
as you know, I was not super on board it either, and was not particularly like, oh yeah, for sure I'm going to watch this. But the other key aspect of the show is that Janeway, a holographic version of her, it runs on the ship, and is essentially kind of starts whipping these kids into shape. She is like their advisor and sort of maternal figure, and then over time. They present, they're like, oh, yeah, we're the new recruits. And she's like, all right. And she's like, starts teaching them what Starfleet is. And so, like, if you think about this as a show kind of for younger viewers who are being introduced to Star Trek, sometimes there's, like, it's like every episode seems to sort of bring out something like, oh, here they find out about the transporter, which they actually don't for several episodes. They land, the ship has landing stuff, and they will land on planets. They find out about
too, right?
It had the capacity, but, of course, they use the transporter all the time.
Yeah.
Wow. Just looking at the cast list, the voice acting is just tremendous in this.
Who are some of the voice actors?
I mean, John Noble was the Diviner, which but Dee Bradley Baker is Murph. Jimmy Simpson of Westworld.
Murph, by the way, is their little cute protoplasmic creature who seems to be indestructible.
Yeah,
a little kind of and who again early on seemed too cutesy, but over time I came to actually really like Murph.
Jimmy Simpson is Dreadnought.
That's the Grievous type.
Jason Alexander is Noom.
Jason Alexander?
That must be a guest character. I remember that, but I can't quite remember who that is.
David Diggs is Tysus.
Also guest star.
Jamil.
You are looking at there is a crew that is in pursuit of them at the end of this first season in the finale.
Oh,
and
the
people,
okay.
David Diggs and Jason Alexander are the. They are the rest of the bridge crew of this ship that's a Federation ship that's in pursuit of them.
So, do they explain the ship? Like, it's clearly like some kind of Starfleet prototype, right? They don't usually have holographic learning captains or...
Generally not.
Yeah.
Yes, by the end of the first season, it's explained.
Okay, because I'm curious about that. I did like the look of it. Like, it looked very slick.
Yeah, if you took, like, the look of Clone Wars and Rebels, and maybe even threw a little bit more budget behind it, I think, that's what this looks like to Star Trek.
But you also mentioned Chakotay, and because Janeway's a hologram,
yep.
I assume this was, like, further in the future kind of thing, where she was long dead and she was just a hologram. But it seems like maybe it's not that.
It's not that far in the future. Okay. I think that we maybe know the specific date, but it is set in the Delta Quadrant where Voyager took place.
Okay.
Also, I think it may go to at least one other quadrant, but it's for the most part, they're out of it, and that means there's no Federation influence out here.
Okay.
A kind of recurring thing is, like, some people know a little bit about the Federation. Sometimes they're kind of a little bit of a legend to it. And some skeevy people are like, the Federation, thank God they're not out here. I hate the Federation. but yeah, it follows the kids as they have their own awkward first contact mission, as they try to decide, or do they want to have anything to do with the Federation? Are they just happy to be free? And of course, there's a pursuit thing. The Diviner is after them.
It sounds like a fun playground. And
yeah. It is a little kiddie at times, and sometimes I thought that was, that's not really what I wanted in Star Trek. But as it grows, especially I think the last three episodes are all really strong episodes, and I was liking it even before that. But I feel like it really kind of came through near the end.
Okay.
So so I'm recommending it. It has fun action sequences. The kids are kind of goofy kids, so, like, you know, they're going to be clowning around a little bit on this ship and having some fun. At one point, one of the kids finds out about the Kobayashi Maru, which the ship's holodeck can run.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, this is the lead kid, his name is Dal, and he's like, I want to try the Kobayashi Maru. And so we get to see him take it multiple times as he tries to figure it out.
Okay.
There's a lot about the sort of crew, like, he is not used to, most of them are sort of surviving on their own, sort of solo, and so they have to kind of learn to work together. Janeway helps out with a lot of that stuff. And, I think it is worth a look. I think it comes together pretty strongly by the end.
I want to real quick talk about Netflix's new show, Murderville.
Yep.
Which is based on...
This sounds fun to me.
I think this is based on, like, a BBC show or something. There was a previous version.
Oh, okay.
But basically, there's six episodes. It's a really quick watch.
Yeah.
And it's a mix of, like, it's a mix between improv comedy, almost a game show element, and a procedural show. So basically, Will Arnett...
Mm-hmm.
Plays, I can't remember the name of his character.
So, Terry Seattle.
Terry Seattle, the senior homicide detective in this sort of California-based thing. His ex-wife is his chief. They're getting divorced. And every episode she brings him a new case.
Uh-huh.
And every episode he is teamed with a junior detective, a junior homicide detective, played by a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
So Conan O'Brien is the first one.
Okay.
Marshawn Lynch, Sharon Stone, Annie Murphy, who I think is from Schitt's Creek.
Oh, okay.
And
the big hook is that they are playing a character. They're improvising.
Kumail Nanjiani, and the last one, Ken Jeong.
Oh yeah, Ken Jeong.
So they are basically not given the script. I think there's a general. The general outline.
They must know what their character is supposed to be.
There is no character. That's them.
Oh.
Yeah, they're playing themselves.
They're playing themselves.
Oh, I see.
But it's as if they decided to become a homicide detective.
Okay.
And so every episode they go to the medical, they've got a girl playing a medical examiner, so they do like, they maybe go to the body, and then they interview, they get three suspects.
Yeah.
And they have a notebook on which there are questions they're supposed to ask of the suspects, which are just usually like, where were you, this guy. So they have a little guidance in the form of this notebook that has their questions to ask. But basically, they go through this thing. Will Arnett is playing a character, so he has a little arc in each one. The first one, it's like, he's got stuff from his ex-wife that she wants him to pick up. Or there's one in, with Sharon Stone, he's like, she's trying not to fall in love with me. And they get these clues, and they go and do... So they do an interrogation of someone, and then usually there's one they have to go undercover where Will Arnett is in their ear with a earpiece, and he's like, okay, just say exactly what I say, and you'll be fine. And so he's like, he makes up ridiculous names for them that they have to say with a straight face.
Am I correct? So that they're not just doing the investigating portion, but in sometimes reacting to Will Arnett's personal character arc, that they will interact on that stuff.
And then they have to suspect.
Then they have the three suspects, they call them together, and they have to pick which one they think did it.
Uh-huh.
And if they get it right, the chief shows up, and he's like, what? She's like, what's going on in here? And and then they lay out their logic. And then the chief tells them whether they were right or wrong. If they're right, they get to stay on or whatever. If they're wrong, she's like, you're fired.
Uh-huh. I will also say, though, I just watched the first one. I'm cautiously optimistic about the rest.
You definitely haven't seen the whole show yet.
Yeah, but I did like the fact that they do lay out, like, throughout the episode, they do leave clues.
It functions as a whodunit.
I was watching this, I was basically like, who do I think did it?
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised.
And they do. There are clues every time as you're watching, you start to pick up on it. But it's also like, Marshawn Lynch is in the second one, and man, I'm not 100% sure he knows it's fiction. he's so funny in it. I think my favorite is Kumail Nanjiani, because that dude knows improv, and he's... Yeah. And it's... The premise of that one is they go back to Terry Seattle's high school reunion, and sort of he's dealing with his inferiority issues while they look into the murder.
Well, I love Will Arnett, so I'm going to keep watching this.
It's super funny. I about died laughing at the one with Kumail Nanjiani in it.
Okay.
I think that is my favorite. But Sharon Stone is surprisingly good in this. I mean, as a comedic actress, I don't think of her as a comedic actress, but she was really funny in it. She brings sort of a confidence to it that's kind of fun. It's definitely worth a watch. I thought it was super fun.
Cool.
I need to check it out. What's it running on?
Netflix. That's on Netflix.
Got it.
Yeah. Murder mystery TV comedy seems to be having a renaissance right now. Because you got this, you got The After Party, which continues to be great.
Yeah.
And you've got Only Murders in the Building on Hulu, which is fantastic.
And even Branagh's big budget, kind of messy Poirot movies.
Yeah, it's true. All right. That's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo-cho!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.